February 6, 2017.
Yeah, it's Larry Baldassaro.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Good. How's it going?
Very good, thanks.
So, is this a good time?
Yes,
Excellent. By the way, how was your trip to Madrid?
Oh, it was fun. It was good. I had never been to Spain, so it was really nice. It was Major League Baseball sent me over there to help with a coach's clinic,
Really?
and
Wow.
yeah, it was a good time.
Is that something you've been doing routinely?
Yes, actually, I was sent over to Germany last year, and they asked me to go. Actually, Germany was 2 years ago. They asked me to go to Italy last year. I wasn't able to make it because I was busy here in the States. Yes, they want to do. They're trying to promote baseball in Europe, so each year they're going to a different spot.
Right.
So yeah, they want me to be involved every year. So it's pretty cool.
And are you working with coaches over there? At what level?
Yeah, so we're working with coaches over there. This one in Spain was more little league and high school. Apparently, they don't have college baseball over there in Spain.
Right.
So just little league and high school, and then. Sometimes when we go, like when I went to Germany, it wasn't a coach's clinic, but it was a like a kid's clinic. So we would go to, we probably went to five or six different cities, and there would be maybe 50 to 100 kids there, and we would put on, a little clinic to where the kids were hitting and fielding ground balls and stuff like that. So it was pretty neat.
Really
Yeah.
nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to do today is talk about, and I'd rather this be more like a conversation than a Q&A, because in the book, these interviews are going to be presented as first-person narratives. In other words, no, my questions won't appear. So feel free to just expand on anything that we talk about and, just go ad lib, whatever. And we'll talk obviously about your career and particularly something about the World Baseball Classic. But the first thing I want to talk about is a little bit of your family background, your Italian heritage.
Okay. So from what I've learned, my family is from Santa Margherita de Belice, and that's a small town on the northwestern side of Italy. It's very close to Palermo.
To Palermo?
To Palermo, yep.
So you mean the northwestern side of Sicily?
Is that what? Yes, the northwestern side of Sicily. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Santa Margherita di, what's the last part?
Belize. Belize.
Oh, yeah. I know where that is. I've been there. That
Oh, is that right?
they had a massive earthquake there. Do you know about that?
That's right. I did hear about that. My
Yep.
brother told me. Yes.
Because I went and worked in Sicily for a year right in that area, and I don't want to get into it now. I can actually send you something I wrote. It's the most remarkable thing I've ever seen in all the times I've been to Italy, what that earthquake did and how long it took them to rebuild, and it's
Wow.
fascinating. So what side of your family's from there?
So that's my dad's side of the family.
Okay, and who came, or when?
So it was my great grandfather came over when he was, I want to say, he was a boy, maybe 5, 6 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and they moved to Brooklyn.
Okay, as so many did. All right, and what about on your mom's side?
So my mom's side, I'm a little fuzzier on that. It was, and I, you know what? I should have talked to my mom before we had this conversation, and we can still have another conversation.
Okay, that's
I can
fine.
talk to her and find out for sure.
Okay.
Let's see. My I don't know how involved you want to get, but I spoke to my brother the other day, and he had said, and again, I don't know if this helps you out, but one of our direct ancestors' story was featured in the movie The Leopard with Burt Lancaster.
Oh, I saw that in Italy. Yeah.
You did.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it was Burt Lancaster speaking Italian, but of course it was dubbed.
Right.
So one of your ancestors was portrayed in that movie?
That's correct. And apparently, he was a friend of the prince of, I might be getting this wrong, maybe Ducato of Palermo, I think.
Sure. Yeah, this is one of the most famous novels of 20th century Italian literature, The Leopard.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I taught that book when I was still teaching Italian.
No
Oh,
kidding.
yeah.
Okay.
Wow, do you know a name there for the relative?
He was, let me see. I wrote this down. He was a friend of Prince of Ducato. Am I saying it right? Cato? Yeah, he was a friend of Prince of Ducato. He came to the U.S. to find a location for the prince in case he had to flee from Garibaldi.
No kidding.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my great, great, great grandfather, I believe.
That's on your dad's side.
That's on my dad's side, yes.
Yeah,
And
from Sicily, yeah.
his name was Francesco. And the name has been passed down from, my great grandfather, or actually, this is my great great grandfather, my great grandfather, my grandfather, my father, and then to myself.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat.
Wow. My grandmother's maiden name, she's from the Abruzzo region, was Catalano.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I always assume that with that background, there must be some Spanish heritage from Catalan, you know?
Sure, I agree. Yep, no doubt.
Anyway, that's a fascinating story.
Yes, it is pretty fascinating. Yep.
Cool. Outstanding. Okay, go ahead. If you have any more.
No, that's all that I basically learned about that. And like I said, my brother, he knows, I mean, he's a history buff, and he knows so much. I think if you wanted to have another conversation, I could talk to my brother further and then try to find out more, but I don't know how in-depth you actually want it.
Well, I mean, it's all interesting to me, but we don't have to pursue it too far.
Right.
Did you know your grandparents on either or both sides?
Oh, yes. Yep. I knew both.
So you're, let's see, did they all live in the New York area?
They lived in Brooklyn. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, trying to think. My dad's side, they all lived in Brooklyn. When I was a kid, we always used to go in to see my great grandfather.
Oh.
And I remember my great grandparents from my mother's side as well. Now they were on Long Island, but I'm trying to, obviously when they came to New York, I'm not positive where they first settled.
But so I'm clear. The Francesco Catalanato that you mentioned, who was a friend of that's your great grandfather.
That's my great great grandfather.
Ah, okay. So you didn't know him, obviously, but you did know your
No,
great.
no, 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 no. No, I didn't know him. I only knew, right, I knew my great grandfather. Yep.
Well, that's still pretty far back.
Yes.
Wow. And they must have spoken Italian.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. My great grandfather and great grandmother, they spoke Italian. Trust me, having a conversation with them was pretty difficult because their English wasn't very.
Yeah, like my grandmother. Yeah. So all of that, did you grow up having a sense of being Italian American yourself?
Yes, I did. I did, not as much as I would have liked to, I guess. However, now with the World Baseball Classic and the Italian national team, and then also going over to Italy, it's like now I'm kind of I'm learning more about it, and I am. I wish when I was younger I knew more about my heritage, but it is nice to now kind of figure everything out and have conversations with my dad and you know, my brother, and it's really very fascinating.
So, how often have you been to Italy yourself?
So I've only gone one time. I went about 3 years ago. I went over there to help the Italian national team.
Oh yeah,
to help, you know, to coach them, and I was able to. It was pretty neat because the coach of the World Baseball Classic team, Marco Mazzieri. He brought me over to his town. Now, you know, obviously when you go to Italy, you know, you're going to Rome and Florence and Siena and all these places, but he was able to bring me to some of these small towns. And kind of go, he showed me around all over the place. So it was kind of neat to see it that way, as opposed, you know, I still got to go to Rome and Florence and all those great places, but I also got to see it like an Italian, right? You know, somebody that lives in these small towns. It's pretty neat.
Well, you know, it's never too late to pick up in your heritage. I mean, I came to my own identity quite late when I was in college, but you know, it's nice to know where you came from.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk then about baseball. As a kid, I mean, how did you get involved, and when did you start?
Well, I've started playing baseball ever since I can remember. You know, as a little boy, when my dad would come home from school, I remember every night, you know, he'd get home at, say, 6 o'clock or whatever, and we'd go in the backyard, and we would throw, and he would pitch to me, and I really grew a love for the game at such a young age. You know, after we would be outside playing for, say, a half hour or whatever, we'd come in, we'd eat dinner, and then I always remember my dad would put on the Yankee game. And me and him would sit there and watch the game. And unlike kids today, I remember sitting there and being fascinated by the game for 2.5, 3 hours.
Wow.
At times, I really, really enjoyed it. It seems like nowadays, you know, with all the social media and the video games and all that, kids can't sit and really watch a game anymore. But those were some of the times in my childhood that I really, really cherished and really enjoyed. So my dad, I'm so happy that my dad introduced me to the game at such a young age.
Yeah, boy. And then when did you start playing organized ball?
So I started probably when I was, say, 5 years old with T-ball and moved up, you know, through Little League and obviously to travel baseball and high school baseball. But it was probably 5 years old when I remember being on the field playing T-ball.
So at what point did you start to think about, well, maybe I can do this for a living?
Well, it honestly wasn't until my senior year of high school. I was always a good player, but I wasn't necessarily the best player on my teams, especially not on my high school team. We had a very, very good high school team that the year before I got to the varsity team won the New York State Championship.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we had three guys on my team that were very highly scouted by not only by Major League scouts but also by college scouts. It wasn't until my senior year when I really started progressing, and I benefited by those scouts being there looking at these other guys, because I played well and kind of turned their heads, and when the draft came in June of my senior year, 1992, I remember some of the scouts came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, we were here looking at these other guys, but we think you're a player that should get drafted." And that, once I heard that, you know, as an 18-year-old kid, wow, well, I really have a chance to play professional baseball here. And it, even though it was a dream of mine since I was a little tiny boy, I don't know that I necessarily believed that dream until, you know, I was 18 years old and these pro scouts were coming around looking at me.
Right. Didn't you have a bit of a dilemma at the draft? Weren't you offered a scholarship to Seton Hall?
I was, and it was a tough decision for me because schooling was very, very important to me and my family. Mm-hmm. I had a full scholarship to Seton Hall, and then I also had this. I was drafted in the 10th round by the Tigers, so I had a tough decision to make. And the draft was in early. I want to say it was in early June, maybe early to mid June, and it took me over a month to make my decision. And my mom and dad were very, very instrumental in helping me with that decision. They basically said, "Listen, Frank, whatever your decision is, we stand by it." My dad was kind of leaning a little bit towards me signing with the Detroit Tigers, and my mom was leaning towards me going to school.
Yeah,
as you can imagine, and so it was tough. It really was. I kept weighing the pros and cons and trying to figure, okay, well, what happens if I go to school and then I get hurt, and then I won't have that opportunity to possibly live out a childhood dream.
Sure.
It came down to the Tigers put a clause in my contract that, okay, if you wind up quitting baseball, you know, say you play a couple of year or two and you quit, we'll give you some money towards your schooling. Here I was, you know, giving up this opportunity to get my school paid for. So there wasn't a heck of a lot of money, but maybe I believe they said, "We'll give you $25,000. It could only be used towards school."
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helped me make my decision, and I went ahead and signed with the Detroit Tigers.
Good decision.
Yeah.
I mean, 10th round draft pick, okay, and the odds are not great. You know that better than I do. Yeah. And yet, and in fact, I know your book has a subtitle of an unlikely journey.
Yeah.
So then you had a 14-year career. So I have to ask, what got you to the major leagues under those circumstances?
Okay. Well, I met a guy by the name of Larry Parrish in the minor league.
Oh, sure.
And he was my coach. And for whatever reason, he took a liking to me. And he took me under his wing, and he kind of made me his project. And he made sure that I was in the batting cage early every single day, and I was in the batting cage late after, you know, the games were over, the practices were over. He wanted me one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. And
he not only taught me the mechanics of my swing, most importantly, he taught me the mental part of the game. He taught me to be prepared. He taught me how to watch a pitcher and be able to pick up the little tendencies the pitcher might have to get an edge. And I felt like, had I not met him, you know, I probably would never have made it to the major league. So I give him a lot of credit.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like I mentioned, the preparation. I was a little bit maybe crazy with the way I would prepare. You know, there were guys that would write down things in a book. I wrote down everything that I learned. I wrote down everything that I saw, and I felt like I had to become a student of the game and do all the little things correctly, because again, I wasn't 6'4", 250 pound and ran like a deer. So I was, I didn't have some of these talents that some of these other superstar players have.
Right.
So that's what I feel like becoming a student of the game helped me get there. And the fact that I was able to play multiple positions,
right,
kind of made me a little more valuable and allowed me to stay in the big leagues for as long as I did.
I don't think most people realize how hard it is to play the game at that level. At any point before you got to the majors, were you discouraged and thought, well, maybe this isn't for me?
Oh, absolutely. Especially after my first year in the minor leagues, after, I had never used a wood bat before. It was always the metal bat.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes a huge difference. You know, when you're going from metal to wood, here I was, an 18-year-old kid, very weak, and to pick up that heavy wood bat and swing it, it was difficult. So I didn't do well when I played. I missed my family terribly, missed my friends terribly, and the way of life wasn't really what I was used to. You know, I had my mom and dad that always did everything for me. They cooked, they cleaned, and now all of a sudden I was out on my own.
So, yeah.
It was a culture shock.
Yeah.
I remember coming home after that season saying, Dad, I think I made the wrong decision here. You know, my friends are in college, they're having a great time, and I'm miserable. So my dad told me, hey, Frank, you can't give up on this. You can't quit. Give it another try. Go back, you know, for another season and see if you can get used to the lifestyle and if you can, start to enjoy playing baseball again. And that's what happened. I went back. A good season. I got again. I met Larry Parrish and started to feel a lot more comfortable.
So it was that second year that you met Parrish?
Yes.
Okay. Wow, it's a good story.
Yeah.
What do you think? It was harder to get to the big leagues or to stay there once you got there?
Both very difficult. But I think once you get there, you have guys coming up behind you. They're drafting guys. You have guys that are dying to get to the big leagues. So they are, you're always kind of looking over your shoulder until you maybe sign a big contract and you have that comfort level. So it was tough getting there, but I think staying there for the first, let's call it 5 years, was equally or even harder. Than getting there, yeah.
And then finally, you know, when you decided to retire, that had to be hard to give it up after 14 years, too.
Yeah, it was, because not only was it was 14 years in the major leagues and 5 years in the minor leagues, and it was something that, you know, like I said, when I was, you know, I did for my whole life. When I was 5 years old, I was playing baseball. Yeah. Now it was going to be, you know, taken away. I wasn't going to be playing anymore. And I remember I was, when I got released by the Mets in 2010, and I'm not a crier, but I remember I was in there and I had some tears coming down my eyes. And I wasn't upset that I got released. It was just, I knew in my mind, I knew in my heart that was it. Like I wasn't going to sign with another team. I knew that mentally and physically I had it. So to know that the game was done for me, you know, like I said, I had a few tears in my eyes, and it was tough. I made the phone call to my dad on my way home and told him, you know, what had happened, and it was something that I knew was coming, but I even though I was prepared for it, I didn't know how hard it would be.
Sure. Well, you know, 14 years, you're a 292 lifetime hitter, for God's sake. You hit 300 four times. You finished fifth in the American League in 2001. And as far as I know, you battled Ichiro right down to the wire for the title.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about that.
That was fun. It really was. It was, it was kind of when I knew I had made it. You know, I was not only an extra player on the team or a utility player. I was a guy that was playing every day, and My name was in the paper every day, and we had, you know, that was Ichiro's first year, and the Japanese media was all over the place. So every time we would play them, there would be like 50 Japanese media at my locker, and it was like the attention that I was getting was amazing. And even if we weren't playing Seattle, I still have Japanese media at my locker. You know, the last 2 weeks of the season, it was really neat, and I'm glad I had the experience like that, because you know, not being a superstar player, sometimes you don't get that attention. But for that, the last, especially I'd say like the last month, or 2 weeks, I really got a lot of attention, and it was pretty neat.
How close was the battle at the end?
Well, it's funny. The last three games, I went 0-4, 0-4, and 0-4. So I was 0 for my last 12. And he was like, he went, I don't know, like 8 or 9 for his last 15, something like that. He got hot, and I got very cold. And before that, before those games, it was pretty close. It was only maybe about a 4 or 5 point difference.
Wow.
And then like I said, I got cold, he got hot, and he just took off with it. So it was disappointing, but you know what? I didn't have any regrets. I was happy that I was in that position.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you had done nothing else in your 14 years, I mean, that's the hell of a thing to have on your resume and to look back on.
Sure.
Wow. Well, as you look back on your career, is there anything that you do differently than you did?
You know, I don't have any regrets. The one thing that I do say, and it's really not something that I could have changed, over my 14-year career, I had never been on a team that went to the playoffs. Which is kind of crazy, you know, for somebody that had been there for 14 years.
Yeah.
And I remember at the end of my career, there was a stat that came up during the playoff game, and I was in the top five of Major League Baseball players that had played for that long and never made it to the playoffs. So, yes, I regret not making it to the playoffs. I understand there's really nothing individually that I could have done. You know, I was with some teams that just missed out. When I was with the Toronto Blue Jays, that's the teams that won, you know, 90 games for the season, or more. But we were playing the Red Sox and the Yankees 19 times each.
Yep.
That's when those two teams were on fire.
Right.
So, you know, I had some bad luck in there. Everyone I talk to that have played in the playoffs say it's just amazing. It's just a whole different level. So I wish that would have been the case. But again, it just wasn't meant to be.
So overall, this is your dream as a kid. And looking back, did it fulfill your expectations, exceed them?
Oh, it exceeded them. It really did. I mean, just little things. Knowing, you know, I never knew how the players were treated, but to be treated the way we were, you know, from the hotel rooms to the flights, you know, I never knew that these guys didn't have to fly with, you know, everyone else. Basically, we would just pull up to the airplane, take 2 steps on the ground, be right up in the on the plane, and next thing you know, we were taken off. So there was, you know, not waiting in an airport on security lines and stuff like that. The way the food that they put out for us, the way that you are perceived by the fans, like I really enjoyed. I know that as a kid, I loved going to Yankee Stadium, and my favorite player was Don Mattingly. I would watch him, you know, I was able to go down and get an autograph from him, and I always said to myself, man, if I ever get that opportunity, I would be there for the fans, and I would sign autographs, and I would go out of my way to make these kids feel good, and that's what I did. I was happy to get that opportunity, but it really was amazing how I was treated by the fans, by the organizations and stuff like that. So it definitely exceeded my expectations, and I'm so happy that that I was able to get that opportunity.
Can't ask for more than that, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
If in any way do you think the game changed while you were involved with it professionally?
It did change. I really do believe it changed. I was kind of, I feel like, one of the last of the old school mentality. It seems like after I got there, we had kids that were getting drafted and getting like $5, $10 million signing bonuses.
Yeah.
And these kids were getting to the major leagues and thinking who they were. What I mean.
Yep.
When I got there, I kept my mouth shut, and I did what I was told to do. And now all of a sudden, these kids are coming in, and they're signing $10 million contracts before they even, play one professional game. I didn't think that was right. And kids, they didn't respect the veterans. I felt that was a little bit of a problem. I saw that firsthand. To me, it was disappointing because I was always taught to respect the veterans and basically, do what you're told. And there should be a time, where you are the rookie and you have to, carry the beer on the bus. Or
right.
You have to do the little things, where I saw that change right before my eyes, and I didn't like that. As far as the game itself, obviously, when I played, it was what we now call the steroid era.
Right.
So, there were, I saw firsthand that there were guys that on my teams that were, in fact, doing steroids. So I felt like that changed the game on the field. It changed the numbers that these guys were putting up. It made it a little unfair for some of the other guys that weren't doing steroids, because now you had guys that were bigger, stronger, faster, and were recovering better after these games. And for some of us other players that weren't steroid guys, it was a little unfair. So the game changed in that regard as well. And I'm happy to see that Major League Baseball is doing everything they can to get the steroids out of the game and get it back to what it used to be.
Right. I don't know if you want to go on record about this, but what about the notion of these guys maybe getting into the Hall of Fame, that some numbers are increasing for some of them?
I've got a different type of stance on this, and you may agree or disagree, but I don't, I did play in that era, and if we don't let these guys in, it's basically just kind of forgetting that era. And I saw it happen with my own two eyes. I saw these guys put up these numbers. So I'm not saying that necessarily it's these numbers are valid numbers. However, I feel like we need to recognize during that period the guys who put up the best numbers. Because if we just pick and choose, oh, I think this guy did steroids, I think this guy didn't do it, then we're going to have guys in there that did do steroids and guys that should be in there, and they didn't do steroids. So I think, and I know this will never happen, but my thought process was, if you would have either a wing maybe a hall or a wing at the Hall of Fame that has, a title on it or a banner on it that says, okay, these were players that played in the steroid era, or in, maybe you don't even have to call it the steroid era, just say from 1990 to 2010 or whatever, 2005, whatever it is, and have the guys in who put up the numbers to be Hall of Famers. And then that way, the public can decide whether, I did here, but I think it's steroids.
Yeah.
I just think it's too difficult for people to say, well, I think he did steroids because he had acne on his back, right?
Right,
He did
right.
steroids because he got, you know, very muscular, because we don't know if that's the case. And from what I'm told, and this could be off record, you know, got some guys that just got in the Hall of Fame, some of my friends tell me that, oh, yeah, you know, I know that that guy did steroids. So if there are guys in there already that did steroids, it would be terrible to keep guys out, you know, like Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, who had great numbers, but, you know, now the voters and the media don't like them because, you know, they know they did steroids or they lied about it.
Yeah, it becomes very subjective otherwise, doesn't it? It's difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. And I understand it's not. There's not an easy solution to this, but you're right. It becomes very subjective. And I don't want to forget, listen, I saw with my own two eyes Barry Bonds coming into our ballpark in Texas. And out before the game, our pitching coach said to our pitchers, we're not going to let Barry Bonds beat us tonight, so don't throw him a strike.
Mm-hmm.
So four at-bats in a row, he got walked on four pitches. Now, not intentionally walked. The pitcher just, you know, threw it outside and
right.
didn't throw him strikes. The fifth at-bat was the ninth inning, and the pitcher throws ball one, ball two, ball three, and the next pitch that he threw missed his spot, and it was outside. It was a spot that Barry Bonds was able to put the bat on the ball, and sure enough, he had a game-winning home run. And I was looking at it like, you've got to be kidding me. This guy knows that we're going to pitch around him the whole time.
Yeah.
And you would think after four at-bats, he's probably just putting his bat on his shoulder,
yeah.
thinking, all right, they're going to walk me again. But he was ready for that left, and the one pitch that he hit with it, he hit out of the ballpark. So I was like, this guy's amazing. And you know, obviously we saw what he did, and sure, I am sure that he was aided by steroids. However,
right.
I don't think we can forget some of the numbers that he put up.
I remember feeling the same way. You just watch him, and he'd get one pitch, and he was always
yep.
ready. My
yep.
hero growing up was Ted Williams. And, you know, you talk about great hitters, and I get angry, I guess, subjectively when people compare them and so forth because of what we've been talking about. But I
yeah.
have to admire his ability to put that bat on the ball. And anyway,
oh, yeah.
enough about that. Let's turn to the World Baseball Classic. How's that?
Okay.
So tell me how and why you first got involved.
All right, so it was 2005, I believe, and I got a phone call from the Players Association.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Gene Orza at the time.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he had said to me, hey, Frank, would you be interested? Team Italy is looking for some players. So I said, absolutely. And he said, all right, great. Did your mom and dad grow up? Were they born in Italy? And I said, no, you know, they weren't. He said, all right, well, fine. What about your grandparents? And I said, no, they weren't either. And then he said, all right, do you like pizza? And I said, yeah. He said, all right, you're on the team. So I had told him, I said, listen, it was my great grandparents that were born there. And he said, yeah, he said, listen, we're going to be very lax with the rules. You know, as long as you can prove that to us, then we'd like for you to be on the team because, you know, we're trying to get some major league guys. And I was very, very happy that I was able to play on the team, and it got me more excited about my heritage. It got me more interested, rather, in my heritage, and I started looking into things and talking to my parents and my grandparents, and it was pretty neat to be involved. So that's how it started, and my experience with the Italian baseball team has been awesome. I really, really do love working with these guys. These kids over there in Italy, they want to get better, and they really do love the game. And both myself and Mike Piazza, we're trying to do our best to help baseball in Italy with with doing some camps and clinics, and I know Mike is very instrumental in getting, you know, in doing things over in Italy. He's
right.
Here a lot, and you know, we've always told each other, hey, whatever we can do to kind of help out, give back, that would be great.
What stands out in your memory from the first one, 2006?
The thing that stands out most was, you know, I knew that it was myself, Mike Piazza, a few other guys that were major league players, but I do vividly remember Mike and myself sitting on the bench. We were in, was that Orlando?
Yeah.
Right, and you said you were there, right?
Yeah, I was there as the interpreter for the Italian guys that couldn't speak English. And I spoke with you briefly there, and I quoted you in a piece I wrote for a local online thing. And I remember particularly how well you did. You hit 364 in that first.
Yeah.
You and Mike were really and I was in the dugout for that last game because it was, I had a seat in the stands, but it was really, really hot. I don't know if you remember that third game. So I stayed, and I asked permission, and I stayed in the dugout for the whole game. And I remember Mike standing right on the, you know, the top step and cheering. I mean, he was really into it, as you were too. And I thought that was so cool.
It was. And, you know, the fact that you know, so I'll go back to what I was saying before. Mike and I were sitting on the bench, and we were talking baseball. We were talking hitting, and all of a sudden, one guy came over. One of the Italian players came over. You know, because obviously some of them do speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And then another guy, and next thing you know, we had a group of people around us, and they were just trying to learn by what we were saying. And next thing you know, we were interacting with them and trying to tell them, hey, you know, this is what you should look for in this situation, or, you know, the pitcher is tipping his pitches. I forget exactly what we were talking about. But these guys were just kind of locked in on us. And I said to Mike, these guys really want to learn.
Yeah.
They really enjoy the game and they want to learn. So I was pretty impressed with that. But the other thing was I've never played a game where it was about pride type of thing, pride in your country,
really?
Your heritage. And now it was kind of a whole different ballgame. It wasn't just, hey, let's win, you know, because I won the Texas Rangers or Toronto Blue Jays to win. This was more about showing people that, hey, we've got some good players from Italy or in Italy as well. And it was a whole different ballgame. Obviously, too, when you see the Dominican players and the Puerto Ricans and all the cheering that they do, it's kind of a breath of fresh air, so to speak, just to see all that that pride.
Yeah.
Saying pride in your country, that national pride. So that was pretty impressive. I enjoyed it.
So you enjoyed wearing, what was it like wearing a uniform with Italia on the front of it?
It was pretty cool. You know, I never had dreamed that would be the case. Now to get this opportunity was awesome. So I really embraced it. And obviously, you know, I've got I don't know if you know who Vernon Wells is. Vernon Wells' father is a painter. He paints, and he paints a lot of baseball pieces.
Uh-huh.
So I have this huge painting. I could take a picture of it and send it to you. A huge painting of me in my Italy uniform, because I was very proud of it. And he painted this amazing painting. It's really neat, and I have it downstairs in my man cave. So I'm reminded of it all the time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
One thing, do you remember Tommy Lasorda's speech in the shower room?
that was pretty cool. Sitting in the shower, listening to Tommy Lasorda. Yeah, that was pretty inspirational and something that I never thought would happen. But that was pretty cool.
Remember how he finished the speech? He said, you know, if you win tonight, they'll be dancing in the streets of Florence. They'll be dancing in the Vatican.
That's right. He did.
And everybody cheered and rushed out. It was fun. I loved that experience. Oh, you went back in 2009, of course.
I went back in 2009, which was pretty cool because that was in Toronto. Where I was, you know, where I had played. So that was pretty neat. Then we, then in 2013, I coached.
Right.
In that one. So it's really been a great experience, and I love doing it, and I'm looking forward to heading out there at the in the beginning of May. No, I'm sorry, beginning of March.
Are you going out to coach again?
Going out to coach.
Oh, excellent. Listen, I'm going to be out there. I'm going to have a pass. So, and one of the main reasons I'm going when I'm going is to see the game you're playing against the Cubs on March 7th.
Oh, great.
So I look forward to seeing you there. Well, that's terrific.
Yes.
Excellent.
Definitely. Let's do that. Yep.
Good. So, let's see. Anything else on the baseball classic that stands out in your mind? We haven't touched on.
I'll mention this. The good thing is, you know, being with Team Italy is the spread after the game is usually, you know, the best out of all the teams. I mean, the pasta. I remember. I think when we were in Toronto in 09, I mean, somebody brought this pasta from Italy and made this pasta and this sauce, and it was unbelievable. So, you luck out by being with Team Italy.
That's a good advantage.
Yeah.
Have you noticed, this thought just occurred to me, have you noticed any difference in the Italian players? Do you see an improvement? I mean, different guys, but yeah?
Yep. That's a great question, and yes, I have over the course of the years. You know, think about it, 06, and then the last time I saw these guys was 13.
Yeah.
Definitely, there are players that are definitely getting better. And I always say to Marco and to the guys of the Italian Baseball Federation, I tell them what a good job they're doing because I think baseball is getting better in Italy. Obviously, Italy is not known for. For baseball, but I do feel like they're doing a great job at a young age with the youth, and also at their academy in Italy, because these players are noticeably better as I see them each World Baseball Classic.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes,
the guy I remember from the I guess two of them actually, Alex Maestri, the pitcher.
Sure.
Who would sign, and Liddy, of course, Alex Liddy.
Alex Liddy, yeah. That's a great story.
The first guy to make it to the majors from Italy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, from the academy and so forth. There were six native-born Italians that didn't play in the major leagues, but going back pretty far, Rino Bartoia was the most recent of guys that came to America and ended up in the leagues. Not, you know, they didn't play in Italy. They just migrated and ended up in the majors. But, well, that's good to hear that you see the improvement.
Yes, no doubt.
Well, thinking about, you know, World Baseball Classic, what you're doing, the coaching and your whole career, it's a general question, but what would you say baseball has meant to your life?
Well, you know, although I don't want to be defined, you know, I don't want my life to be defined as the baseball player.
Right.
It has been such a huge part of my life and my family's life. You know, baseball has brought me and my family members closer because they have traveled with me not only all over the country, but also to other countries. So it's been. You know, it's obviously I was able to live out a dream. I was able to make a lot of money playing baseball, and you know, baseball is always going to be so special in my life. I mean, it's I want to be the best dad that I can be, and the best husband and son. But I definitely will always remember my time playing baseball, not only at the major league level, but also with Team Italy and the World Baseball Classics. And I'm very, very fortunate that I was able to live out a childhood dream, and baseball will always be a big part of my life.
Yeah, that's great. So apart from the coaching you're doing in Italy and so forth, what are you doing now?
So I give hitting lessons at a local batting cage called Baseball Heaven. And I'm there, about three nights a week. I do hitting lessons, fielding lessons, and also summer camps as well for these kids. So I like being around the game. I like helping the youth, the local youth here, and wherever I can do all these different clinics and camps. Whenever I get the opportunity to do that, I definitely do it, especially too now that Major League Baseball is allowing us to go over to different countries. I always embrace that and enjoy doing that. So baseball, I definitely want to stay around baseball as long as I can.
Are you still living out on the island or in the New York City area? Yeah.
Yeah,
I went to college with a lot of guys from the island. I went to Union College in Schenectady.
Oh, okay.
A lot of guys from there, a lot of lacrosse players too. Very good lacrosse players. That was our best sport then.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, listen, Frank, do you want to talk a little bit about, and this is up to you, about the Frank Catalanato Foundation?
Sure, I'll let you in on it. You don't have to put this in the book or anything like that. That's not necessary.
This is totally up to you. I mean, I'm happy to put it in if you want or not.
Sure.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. So the Frank Catalanato Foundation was a foundation that my wife and I started in 2001. My daughter was born with a vascular birthmark on her nose, and we were kind of given some bad advice. I mean, the local doctors here on Long Island, basically said, "Don't worry about it; it will go away."
Yeah.
And it didn't. It got bigger. It got more red, and it was as a parent, it was very troubling, and it concerned us. So, luckily, when I got to Texas, I was traded to Texas, and we met a lady there named Linda Shannon, who was able to, she was the head of the Vascular Birthmark Foundation.
Sure.
And she was able to point us in the right direction and get us some doctors that were able to treat these vascular birthmarks. And, when you're a little child and you've got this malformation on your face, you can get some criticism and be, made fun of and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
My daughter Morgan was able to get three laser surgeries and one reconstructive surgery, and right now she's 18 years old, and you would never be able to know that she ever had this birthmark on her face.
No kidding!
My
wow.
wife and I, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. But my wife and I, we continued with this foundation, and we run a golf outing every year. We raise money and try to promote awareness about these vascular birthmarks, because they're not very well. It's not very well known how to treat them. There aren't very many doctors that are willing to treat them, and there are not there are people that have or I'm sorry, children that have these birthmarks that their parents it's considered cosmetic, so insurance doesn't cover it. So what we do is we raise money for these people that do not have enough money to pay for these surgeries, and it's been very rewarding to be able to help out and to give back.